So here we are, Ask the Mayor in Bloomington with John Hamilton. Thank you once again for being with us today.
Of course, Joe, very nice to be with you.
I wanted to start with, of course, just what's making the news, as we always do, and nowadays it's all this political drama that's unfolding before our eyes. Do you have any thoughts on Indiana Governor Mike Pence leaving the gubernatorial race and now on Trump's ticket?
You know, that's a dangerous question for a mayor of Bloomington. I think it's hard for me to watch the Republican convention, actually, Joe. The venom, the divisiveness about the country, I'm tempted to make witty political remarks, which would be hard for me to come up with anyway, but it's you know, this stuff is really important. The president said a while back, this job's really serious. It's very important, and we have to have a real national dialogue about where we're headed. I think Governor Pence's choice is certainly unusual, but he's taken it up to a new stage, and the Republican Party has to pick a new governor candidate, and I'm hoping that John Gregg will prevail. That's what I want to see happen.
Do you think that Pence leaving the campaign will help or hurt Democratic challenger John Gregg?
Well, I think I don't pretend to be an expert on those kind of political issues. I think generally it's hard to beat an incumbent governor, even one who's, I think, made mistakes and is open to a fair amount of criticism. But it's always hard to beat an incumbent governor. So having an open seat, if you will, and having a candidate, we don't know who it'll be yet as of this recording, but having a candidate who's not nearly as well known statewide should help John Gregg overall. So I think it improves his chances a little bit, which I think we're already pretty good.
Just saw today more news on the water issue here in Bloomington. The June disinfectant byproduct levels are out. Some are a little higher than May, but it's probably not a big surprise because it's the summer months. We've talked about that before. Is there anything more to say here other than keep on moving on, huh? Keep working on it.
It's as we always say, we're not out of the woods yet. I don't know when I'll say we're out of the woods with that. We're working on it every month, every day, really. And we were pleased that the numbers still are below last year's 12-month numbers. We do still have work to do. We're looking at getting an analyzer. You know, we went to monthly testing. We're looking at getting an analyzer that on site can actually do live daily kind of testing. So as we calibrate what we want to do. So I'm pleased with what Vic Kelson's doing out there. I think they're training, they're studying, they're improving. We just need to lock it down to get it to the right spot. And we're not there yet, but we're getting there.
And along those lines, the water rates going up about, $9 a month is kind of what they've been talking about for an average household. What does this get the utility department?
Well, we haven't, when I came into office, we hadn't had a water rate increase for 5 or 6 years. We'd actually done a couple studies to prepare for them and then not used them. So it was really a fairly dire situation in terms of making sure we have the resources needed to protect the water system, both the sewer system and the drinking water system. We don't use any tax dollars for that. The utility has the money it has, and that's what it's got. And we need to make sure we have adequate resources to provide clean water and healthy treatment of the sewers. So we've worked, and I've pressed very hard to make sure we are only doing what we need to, but that we're doing what we need to. And that's going to mean improving old pipes that are bursting around us. It's going to mean doing the right thing at the drinking water plant. It's going to mean making smarter meters so that we can keep better track of the whole system.
I also see this past month the Bloomington Police Department created a LGBTQ liaison program, the appointment of 2 veteran sergeants to serve as that. Why was this formed and how does this help the community?
Joe, talking about the police, you really have to talk about kind of what's gone on in the country the last few weeks and, of course, the last few years. It's been a difficult time across the country, police-community relations. We've obviously seen a lot of stressful situations over the last few years, and then the murder of the police in Dallas and in Baton Rouge was horrific. The continuing issues of engagement of public on minor infractions that end up with a fatality of a public is disturbing. I'm really proud of our Bloomington Police Department that I inherited, that they've been working many, many years to reach out to the public. The item you asked about is one of many, many steps that they take, and we're encouraging them to continue to take, to engage the public. I've had the privilege of swearing in probably more than half a dozen, six or eight new officers, a diverse group, young, new police officers that we're proud to have join the force. As you probably know, I asked our Public Safety Board to undertake a full review of the 21st century policing recommendations that the Obama's task force came out, which we're in the middle of. I also asked them to join the Open Data Initiative to share public information about what the police department is doing. I'm talking, the police is, of course, such a fundamental part of city government. They're under a lot of stress. I've gone to the roll calls to talk to the police after what's happened in Dallas and Baton Rouge, and you know, they're told, keep your head on a swivel. We don't expect anything like that in Bloomington, but they didn't expect that in Dallas either. Dallas is a pretty progressive effort going on there too. So I'm really proud of what they're doing. I spoke at the Black Lives Matter rally, and I spoke at the police roll calls, and I said the same thing at both of them, which is, we do not let this divide us as a community. We have problems to fix, of course. We aren't perfect in any of this. None of us is perfect, but we are committed as a community to work together, to provide the services that we all need, and to respect each other through that process. And I'm proud of the police. I'm also proud of the Black Lives Matter rally, which was led by a bunch of people under 20 years old to bring the community together to talk about how to fix all these issues.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that. What was the response? You went with the rally and you spoke at the rally. What's the type of response that you're seeing from people?
Well, it was a great Bloomington moment. You know, it was an afternoon, a beautiful afternoon down on the courthouse square with hundreds of people. It was organized in a few days by, again, a bunch of people under 20 years old who said they wanted to come together and talk about this. It was a variety of opinions, a variety of viewpoints, but from the organizers, from the beginning to the end, the spirit of the community was there saying, we're in this together. You're not going to split us up on this issue. And that was my main message, was pride in the community and pride in the police and in the young people organizing that protest to say we are in this together. And it was a really impressive day. You never know what will happen in your community, because it only takes one person to tear apart a community. But this large number of people are committed to keeping all of us together. And that was impressive, and I was pleased to be part of it.
We have a question, an email from Jordan, would like to know what the plans are for any bike paths, greenways over I-69, and if there's further work to expand the trails in the city and surrounding area.
Sure. Great question. And as you know, we are always trying to expand the trails. There's one being built right now, the B-Link, which is getting finished, and that is an ongoing project we'll keep working on. Now, the I-69, don't get me started on how long that's taken, but it is taking a while. But the bridges over I-69 through Monroe County, I believe, as I understand it, each of those bridges will have a sidewalk on one side and a path, a multi-use path, on the other. So that each of the bridges from Vernal to 3rd to 2nd to Fullerton Tap will have those connectivities. You know, a big interstate like that it cuts the community, no doubt, in different ways, for public safety issues and others. But those trails and sidewalk connectivities, I believe, are going to be put in place.
We have an email from Nancy wondering where you stand on the efforts of the Maple Heights neighborhood and the City Council to work with Duke Energy to design the proposed electrical substation in such a way that its inherent ugliness is disguised and shielded from the neighborhood residents, and it's near the Trades District.
Yes, yes. You know, that project was in place, underway, when I came into this office, and I actually, even before I took my oath of office, I went up to Indianapolis, Plainfield, and met with the president of Duke, Indiana, to talk about that facility, because it is a concern. The location's very sensitive. I tried to understand if there were other options. They've been working with the city planning staff for a year and a half before that. I completely empathize and understand with any neighborhood that lives nearby a new electric substation, or with the Trades District, which we're working very hard to accelerate, enhance. So on the one hand, you got to have electricity, and substations for a growing city are important, and the investment from Duke is important in the city. But I completely concur with, I'm working with, agree with the efforts to try to make sure that what gets done there is an enhancement of the city. Duke has, by the statutes given, the state government have given Duke eminent domain power. Ultimately, they could condemn the property, take it, wipe out the city rights of way and others. They don't want to do that, and I appreciate that they don't want to do that. So we're all working closely with Duke to try to get that resolved. I doubt if we'll find a solution that everyone will be excited about and happy about, because there are different views about what ought to be done. But we're working with it. Some people, for example, think the thing ought to be made as invisible as possible. Other people want to kind of enhance it into a urban form. So, but we're working on it.
Is that something that you see in other cities? I mean, I assume this happens all across the area too.
Sure, it does. We haven't had a new substation here for some time, but you know, if you drive down Rogers Street, you'll pass the substation that's right up against the road, and it's not exactly an enhancement of the physical environment there. Other communities, whether it's downtown Chicago to smaller communities, obviously deal with substations in a lot of different ways. It's all a question of money in many ways. You know, you could bury a substation, but it costs many, many millions of dollars to do so. We're working to try to get a good resolution.
Now, we've seen a few new downtown developments being proposed and discussed since we last talked. Now, the one making its headway, it seems like, the most is the Chocolate Moose development. Another on the table, a new development near Memorial Stadium. But this common theme coming from you that we see in these meetings is that need for the requirement of affordable housing in each of these developments. What does that mean to you, affordable housing, and why is that so important?
So that's a great question. Bloomington, in my view, is in a transition period, and it's an important transition. You know, when I ran for mayor, I had many, many dozens of house parties, and at almost every house party, people talked about the built environment and the housing and how do we make sure Bloomington works for people from all walks of life. And the only way you do that is by having programs and policies in place that help support a mix of affordability in housing. And we have not really had that in Bloomington to date. We have had a lot of market rate development that has not been accompanied with other opportunities of affordable housing. So my job as mayor, new mayor, is to help think about how do we steer this ship. It's a big ship. It's been riding this way a long time. There's a lot of momentum. I've been very pleased to work with some of these new developers. Some are local, some are not, but new development projects to say, look, we need to move this ship so that as market rate investments happen, which is good, we want market rate investments. But as those happen, we need to do some things to help assure we're creating affordability for other people, for people who are paid the living wage, or for people who are working two jobs, or for people who are in the middle of the income strata but can't live downtown because it's too expensive. So we're kind of learning as we're going. I mean, the Chocolate Moose is a good example where it looks like the council hasn't acted yet, but we're kind of talking about some abatement of taxes for a modest short period in exchange for some permanently affordable units in the project that will be available for full-time employees, for workforce housing. We're talking to each of the developers about how do we help move this ship, and certainly talking to council and plan commission about that too.
When you say you talk to the developers, what's their reaction?
Well, I think, you know, most developers they obviously need to make a profit on their project. They don't invest a lot of money unless they see a way to make a return on their investment. But most of them also do want to be a positive force in the community. They range, of course, from building very large, or proposing to build very large student-oriented projects like we've looked at 17th and Dunn, to much smaller projects, you know, at the Sullivan Building or of course, there are even individual homes being built all the time. So that whole range, people have different motivations. But I think generally I've been impressed that the developers appreciate that Bloomington is a better place when we have a range of people living amongst each other, and that doesn't happen automatically. Now it's, you know, again, we'll never get agreement on everything on these issues, but I think the general principle that we want a community where people of many different backgrounds and approaches and resources can share the community and enjoy the community, I think is one that most people share.
And just to make sure I'm clear, this isn't an ordinance or a law or anything. This is something, or not a development.
Not yet.
Right, that they have to do. This is something that you're bringing to the table and trying to make happen. Is that true?
It's a mix. For example, many of the developers are asking for the zoning or ordinances or rules to be adjusted for density, for height, for setbacks, for various things. So they're asking the city and the community to say, let me do some things that aren't exactly what your rules require. We're discussing with them this idea of affordable housing in the context of where we're all trying to go. I do think we will be working on ordinances, regulations to put this into place, but it's not, you know, it's not bad to have kind of step-by-step experimentation almost as we go. So that's what's going on right now.
And for the most part, you're talking about, I think the Chocolate Moose has, I mean, it's like we're talking 4 or 5 in a development of what, 50?
About 10%, right?
Yeah.
About 5 units out of 50, something. That's right.
So the follow-up question for that, for me, would be, especially for that area that we're talking by near the stadium, that's a huge development that they're proposing. Why would those who would afford or that would qualify for affordable housing, then, but there's only 10% want to live in a student type unit?
Yeah. So that's a good question too. And typically in inclusionary zoning cities around the country that use that technique to support affordable housing, there's usually a range of options that include units in the development itself. If that's not appropriate or for various reasons may not be the optimal approach, they may be units nearby, or they even may be payments made in lieu of units to help support the construction and development of units somewhere else. So usually that range of options is there, and I'm not going to predict who might want to live in that place, but it could be. You could be correct.
What else is on the mayor's desk right now? Here we are, mid-July.
Well, yeah, the mayor's desk is full of things. That's great fun. There's always budget development going on. This is my first round of developing the budget, so we're in the midst of that, kind of sharpening the pencils and working on that. And we'll be in front of the council in about 4 or 5 weeks, really, for that. So we're busy with that. We continue to work on public safety issues every day. We talked quite a bit about the police. We have a new fire chief who's digging in and working hard to make sure we get better. You know, that was a dramatic episode a few weeks ago when we had a new lifeguard in our public pool system save the life of a 5-year-old. And that came up because the fire department helped do the training, the CPR training of all the lifeguards. This young lifeguard just graduated from IU. He's going up to Chicago to work next year, but he needed a summer job. He chose a lifeguard. He'd never been a lifeguard before. And within his first few weeks on the job, he saved a kid. So, you know, that was fun. And I got to send Mayor Pete Buttigieg of South Bend a note saying thanks for, he's a native of South Bend. So I said, thanks, Pete, for sending us a good citizen of South Bend to help our residents. You know, we have public safety issues. We have summertime. There's a lot of construction going on. There's a lot of road work and pothole filling and, you know, sidewalk repairs and all that kind of stuff going on. And
have you heard, is 10th Street going to be ready by move-in day?
You know, I keep my fingers crossed. Joe, I actually haven't heard the timing. I know they're planning on it, and I'm counting on it. That's an important corridor for sure. I don't go near there right now if I don't have to. You know, the summer's a great time. We just had Taste of Bloomington, and we had Downtown Art Fair, and we've got, you know, all these kind of festivals. Lotus, I know, is getting underway. Planning for that's underway. And also, summer's a great time, you know, for planning and for enjoying the community.
And front page of the paper today, Saran Industries buys the former Otis property. That could be a sign of economic development there on the west side, huh?
Well, you know, I said when I came into office, the number one driver of all that we want to do is jobs and the economy. We've got to have a growing, healthy economy with good jobs and sustainable jobs. So it's encouraging to see both new companies, existing companies doing that. That's a constant effort. You know, I'm working hard, for example, on the citywide broadband. We've been doing a lot of spade work behind the scenes on that this summer to try to get that infrastructure in place so that those jobs can come.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be part of an award-winning program. I understand you got a nice national award for this program, didn't you?
Yeah, Prindy, we're the second place for best public affairs program.
Outstanding.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations to you. And thanks for the public work that you do sharing this information.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You bet.